and welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron the Gambler Varola.
What's up, guys? Throwing dice, counting cards. You know how I get down.
Making bets. What's going on, all? Over movies.
Making bets over movies, right? Got some friendly $1 bets thrown out to some of our listeners. So I'm excited. I'm pretty confident I'm going to win.
Yeah, so we might as well just get right into it and talk about what we're talking about, which is
the bet's all about.
Yeah, so they came out, Monday? We're recording this on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That Mary Poppins Returns, I guess they released a trailer, and it's coming out December 19th, which is 2 days before what we had already spoken about on the show, which was the big weekend where Aquaman and Bumblebee and Alita were all coming out in the same weekend. Well, now Mary Poppins Returns is coming out 2 days before all of those movies, and that is going to be one fascinating box office weekend.
Yeah. So, I mean, Disney throwing the big balls on the table and saying, hey, so that's what? That's a Wednesday?
I would imagine that's a Wednesday. Yeah.
So getting ahead of the holiday rush and getting folks excited, and, of course, getting ahead of all the competition. And it's, you know, here's the thing. So, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, some of the misfires. I don't want to say misfires. It's maybe the intentions of what Warner Brothers was trying to do with its DCU, right? And they weren't making kid films. And that's essentially where, you know, sort of the other films have succeeded, and by other I mean, like, you know, the Star Wars franchises and the Marvel franchise. They tend to be something, you know, they give something for everyone, right? And it's interesting because I think, you know, Mary Poppins is a straight on family film, and it is a, you know, sort of return to form classic film. It feels classic in the first trailer. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how many times, Chris, you watched the trailer. I watched it a couple of times, and it's cut differently. The trailer is cut differently. It's cut. It feels like an 80s VHS movie trailer.
Right.
So it feels a little like nostalgic and a true callback to the, you know, Mary Poppins classic. So I got all types of excited for it, and I'm not really a big Mary Poppins fan at all. So I'm interested to see how it's going to shake out, and if, you know, if the DC's sort of new take at their character, specifically with Aquaman, if it's going to skew more family friendly and gain the dollars at the box office. Otherwise, you know, Mary Poppins is going to certainly win in that category.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, and we mentioned this when we talked about this weekend, like on a previous episode before the Mary Poppins thing. It's interesting to me that people just don't seem scared of avoiding like that date, right? Avoiding Aquaman or anything else. I mean, Bumblebee was already coming out on the same day, and now Disney's got this, and that's fascinating to me. But the way I look at it is, on paper, right, you would assume that, well, the Mary Poppins audience is not necessarily going to be the same audience or 100% the same audience that might go see Aquaman or Bumblebee. But I look at it this way. So Mary Poppins is going to pull from, like you said, a family audience, right? So they're going to pull from the family audience and not so much necessarily from the geek audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Aquaman, which, even if it is going to pull from the geek audience, right? And it's not, it may or may not pull in the family audience, depending, right? But it's also competing with Bumblebee, which is, those two movies, in theory, are going to be fighting for the same audiences, right?
Right.
It was an interesting conversation when we were thinking about which of those two movies would pull in the family audience. But now, with this Mary Poppins thing, it's like, they might just be splitting, like, the non-family audience.
Right.
Like, they might not be looking to split as significant a portion of the family audience as we originally thought, because maybe a big portion of that family audience is going to be going to Mary Poppins Returns, and now they're going to be splitting some of the family audience that maybe didn't go to see Mary Poppins because their kids weren't really into that. plus, you know, like the kind of the fanboy geek audience that's going to go to see the comic book movie or the, you know, the Transformers franchise movie. So, man, I don't know what to do with that. I don't think that Mary Poppins is this like gigantic Disney property. No. Like that, like Beauty and the Beast was, for instance, no. or the Jungle Book, things like that. Like Mary Poppins is different, right, from those. So I don't know that it's a guaranteed like home run, like, oh my God, this thing is going to do like $1 billion. But.
Yeah, no, I don't think so, though.
Yeah.
I don't
think so. But the way that they're marketing it and the fact that it is getting a 2-day head start, I do think that it is going to be a major factor. And it is Disney, right, who's just, you know, they're on a little bit of a roll. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be, this is going to be the most fascinating box office weekend that we've seen in a really long time. And I don't, man, I don't know. I'm just can't believe that this is happening. Like I still, yeah, like we've seen studios avoid this, you know, over time.
It's a crazy weekend and people are going to have to make some serious decisions, you know, when they go to the theater around that time. And the other thing about Mary Poppins, it's really interesting to me because, I mean, given the times that we're living in, and I'd say, you know, these are somewhat dark and dreary times, you know, the movie is really coming off as a true form of escapism, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, like, step into another world.
An innocent kind of time. And
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is it's going to pull some of the older moviegoers. I'm talking, like, 16 above. The grandparents that are going to want to take their grandkids to see the movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a different ball game. One that I don't think, you know, Aquaman will pull as much. But I think, you know, Mary Poppins will certainly be successful on that, on that front for sure. I was upstate, at my in-law's house and, you know, I mentioned it to my wife's grandmother, and she was like really excited about that. And she's like 90.
Right. Well, but
you know what I mean?
I don't know that she was going to be going to see Aquaman or Bumblebee.
But she would go to the movies anyways.
Sure.
But for something like Mary Poppins, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
I think.
And we haven't even mentioned Alita really. I mean, we did briefly when we were talking about what else is coming out, but it's going to be, you know, I mean, look, it's impossible to think that these three, four movies, whatever you want to look at it, aren't going to sort of cut into each other's box office performance. I mean, there's only so much money, right, to go around.
Right.
And only so many screens and only so many theaters. And that's another thing to factor in. So, you know, I mean, you only have so many screens. And sometimes the screen counts are what really help drive, you know, box office as well. And if these four movies are splitting screens and splitting theaters and splitting dollars, I mean, you know, I don't know what the expectation is now at this point. I mean, is it possible for one of these movies to do like $100 million opening weekend? I would have to think that would mean then that something
that
is going to be really underperforming.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to mark them, Alita is probably the lowest one on the totem pole, for
right.
sure.
I mean, I'm not Bumblebee really factoring that
is,
in. But.
I mean, Bumblebee is going to compete directly with, I think, with the Aquaman audience.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder if there's going to be a late game shakeup where one of those decides to move out of the way.
I don't know. We're pretty deep into this.
I know. We're close.
We're in September right now, mid-September. And, I mean, trailers have come out and posters are out and marketing is out. And, I mean, I don't know. And where would they move it to, though? Here's the thing. You know, are you going to move it? I mean, it's already coming out December 21st. So you're not really going to move it to Christmas weekend, and that's not really going to help you much, right? Because it's only a week difference.
Right.
And you're not going to move it into next year. That's a dramatic move. And you're not going to move it up because I don't know that there's really enough time at this point to move it up. So I think this is it. Like I think they're going to hold steady and we're going to be in for a ride.
So it's pretty much a three-way showdown. It's Aquaman versus Bumblebee versus Mary Poppins Returns.
I would think so.
Yeah. All right, guys. Whoever placed the dollar bets, Davo and Adam. Let the best man win.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how this one shakes out. December can't come soon enough.
Yeah.
For sure.
Speaking of movies that, I guess to you maybe can't come soon enough, because I know you were really excited about it, but we got the trailer today for Captain Marvel, the first trailer, which comes out in March of next year. And I know you were really pumped up.
I'm so jazzed about this one. I mean, I know it's a teaser and, you know, it's not really giving us a lot, but to me it is. You know, it's it definitely feels like a tonality shift from Marvel, and in the slightest of ways. It's not necessarily a complete departure, it feels a little different. I certainly am getting a really cool vibe from Captain Marvel herself, played by Brie Larson. So it looks really cool. And, you know, you see young Nick Fury, sans eye patch, and Agent Coulson in the briefest of sessions. And then there's that, they do the full blown like helmet mask thing, which is really cool. And her eyes are lighting up and the action looks cool. And there's Skrulls and there's just all types of good, you know, goodies packed in that trailer. So I'm really excited about it. You know, March, it seems very, very far away. So kudos to them for rolling out the big guns and dropping this bad boy kind of super, super early, but getting enough people kind of stoked on this new character. Because I think this is the one, you know, comparing it to, you know, DC's, you know, Lady of the House, you know, Wonder Woman is a household name. Everyone knows who Wonder Woman is. I don't know if many people really know who Carol Danvers is, aka Captain Marvel. So they got some work to do,
yeah,
in terms of setting her up.
And based on my experiences today, just talking to people that are not like huge comic fans, but like they watch the Marvel movies and stuff, like they have no idea who this is.
Yeah. So I think that's probably why we got a lot of Nick Fury and a lot of that connectivity and the connective tissue to the broader MCU through him. You certainly get the sense that it's a period piece, so it's set in the 1990s. You know, very early S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. Get that nice pager. This is really cool. You know, it looks really cool. I'm jazzed.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at it as a teaser. You know, right. and that's basically what it is. And I'm not going to get too excited or too fired up, either negatively or positively about, you know, a teaser. But you clearly picked, I did like what I saw, though, let's put it that way. And I, mm-hmm. especially the part where she's, you know, powering up, I guess, for lack of a better term, that was, right. that looked awesome, that shot. And I was like, well, that, now that's what we need to see more of, like in the next trailer or whatever. But you pulled more out of that trailer than I did, because you felt, I didn't pull any sense of tone really, or any feel for it. Like I just kind of, I didn't get any of that. And maybe I'll watch it again. And maybe like in context now, hearing you say that, maybe I will feel that. But like, I didn't feel like, oh my God, this feels different from like other Marvel movies or anything like that. I felt very much like an MCU trailer, teaser trailer for me. And I, you know, the emphasis, like you said, on Nick Fury and on a lot of the familiarity, I thought was important, and it was good, because this is a character that people are not very familiar with. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be good. I'm a big Brie Larson fan. I think she looks great in the costume. I think that you know, I think she's a great actress, so I have no doubt that she'll be able to pull the role off. And I think the character could be really great, too. And they've certainly built her up as something that's going to be very important,
yeah.
In the next Avengers movie. So knowing that kind of gets me excited about the movie. Because I can't imagine that the stakes that they're putting on this character. Now, not necessarily in this movie, right? This is an origin film that's a prequel to all of this. But the character itself, the importance of the character, I think kind of has me excited, because I think that they would want to hit a home run, right? Knowing how important she's going to be in Avengers 4.
Well, they kind of have to. Not only that, but she's their first female solo movie, solo character movie, right? So They have to hit this one out of the park, because they've foregone some of the other characters that have been introduced, mainly Black Widow, to do this. So, kudos to the Marvel camp, because they're releasing Captain Marvel during in March, which is Women's Month. Sorry. And her release date, like the day that the movie is released in theaters, is International Women's Day.
Yeah, well, we saw they've had success in the past with those types of things. So they know what they're doing, right? I mean, sure. Breaking news, you know, the MCU kind of knows what it's doing. And Kevin Feige knows what he's
marketing
doing.
Their marketing arm is on point.
And I mean, the movie was originally, you know, and this is just, you mentioned that it's the first solo female-driven movie in the MCU. And I do want to say one thing, though, because I did see a narrative pop up today, and I've seen it before, but it was popping up a few times today. And it's not just coming from, like, DC fans who want to kind of irk Marvel fans. It's also coming from people who just, you know, they're not so in the know, right? They don't follow this stuff as closely. This idea that, like, well, this is just Marvel trying to capitalize on the success of Wonder Woman and creating their own Wonder Woman. You know, this movie was announced in 2014. And it was originally supposed to come out in June of this year, actually. And it wound up getting pushed back to March of next year. But this was announced as part of a big slate in 2014, which is 2 years before BVS came out. And Wonder Woman made her debut on the screen. So the idea that, like, this is just the MCU trying to capitalize and have their own Wonder Woman is kind of a false narrative. And I know why people would think that, because it seems, well, hey, we just had Wonder Woman, it was great, and it was a big success, and now Marvel, now they just decide to do their first female movie. But it's really not it's a false narrative, and the timeline doesn't really work out. It's just that, you know, Marvel has a story that they're telling. And they're telling it, like we've mentioned before, it's one big story told in different chapters and different parts. And this just so happens to be where this character fit in based on where they want her and the effect that they want her to have on this Avengers universe. So while they announced it 4 years ago, it's coming out, you know, kind of almost 5 years after they announced the movie was going to be made. And Brie Larson was even announced a while back, too.
Yeah.
So
it's been a while.
Yeah,
it's been a while. This one was filming, what, right before Infinity War, or right after, shortly after.
Yeah, it would. Right, it would have to have been right around that time because. Yeah.
But it's been a long time coming for sure. I mean, you know, when Marvel announced their slate, this one was certainly a priority.
I mean, there were actually people. This movie was announced so long ago. There were people who were upset and surprised that she didn't show up at the end of Age of Ultron.
Right.
People thought she was going to show up when they did the whole new Avengers thing, and they were kind of flipping out. How come we didn't get Captain Marvel there? And so that's how long this character has been a part of this MCU plans and been in development. It goes back to then. I'm glad, though, that it's happening, and it looks really exciting, and I think the possibilities for the character are great, and I'm really excited for this next phase of the MCU that I hope is going to be relying on, like, Black Panther and Captain Marvel and Spider-Man and characters like that, and we start to kind of phase out some of the characters that we've grown with here with this first
the
few
old
phases. Part. Yeah, the Iron Man and the Captain Americas and the whatnot.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you mentioned Scarlet Witch, because I just read, I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into our whole program, but I just read that the Disney streaming service is considering doing live-action TV shows for not only Scarlet Witch, but Loki.
Really?
So that's super interesting. And that Kevin Feige will be helping to shepherd the adoption of those characters in TV form for the streaming service. So that sounds exciting. I mean, that's really, you know, it's an interesting way to kind of bridge. Well, first of all, I don't know how they're going to do this Loki thing. You know, my continuity Spidey sense is tingling there. But then again, there's another Avengers movie, so we don't really know what happens and all of that. And you know, it's interesting that they would do such a thing for Scarlet Witch. So you know, one leads me to believe, well, not leads me to believe, but I'd say one. I wonder how they'll tie that in with some of the other properties they have recently acquired or are looking to reacquire, like the X-Men.
But now, where did you read that whole thing about the?
It popped up on Variety.
Really?
And Empire, yeah.
Because I'm trying to figure out where that fits, especially since, like, you know, I mean, as we talked about, like, on the last episode, you know, Kevin Feige doesn't have a hand in, like, Marvel Television, Marvel Entertainment. So, like, I'm wondering how that works. Like, are these going to be Marvel Studios productions for television, like, for the streaming service?
So it says,
whatever?
This is what it says. According to Variety, Disney's looking to bolster its streaming service with limited series featuring characters from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Unlike the Netflix shows, which go for street-level action with affordable names and askew performers from the movie showing up, the aim of these new series will be to have the likes of Tom Hiddleston and Elizabeth Olsen starring, with Marvel Studios retaining creative control and not handing them off to the TV department, with movie boss Kevin Feige having more to say.
Wow. So that's, yeah, I guess that pretty much answers my question. So then if you do it as a limited series, because I'm thinking, like, why is Tom Hiddleston going to want to do, like, a TV show? But
he did a small series. I think it was on TNT, actually.
Yeah. So I guess if you do limited series, that give, and Elizabeth Olsen as well, obviously, who does a lot of movies. So you could give them a limited series, you know, make it like 6 episodes or whatever, and then they could still do whatever it is that they're doing. And maybe, you know, contractually somehow, like, that will count as like a movie or whatever, you know, however their Marvel Studios contracts work. Yeah, that's. I mean, look, we know that things are changing, right, with these streaming services, and we've talked about that a ton too, and how, you know, they're a game changer. And if something like this happens, you know, again, it's another example of how important these streaming services could be.
Right, right. I mean, totally redefining the way that we view content.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, watching, you know, what would be movie stars working their way into television. Or what we assume as being television, because it's kind of funny. I don't necessarily consider, you know, I mean, I guess it is, you know, because you're home, you're watching the TV, but it's not TV anymore. You know, this is like not network television. So it's kind of interesting because I think the whole
it's in-home entertainment or whatever they want to call it.
Yeah. So very interesting. So we'll continue to follow that and keep you guys posted as that develops. But sign me up for that Disney streaming service, yo.
Yeah, sign me up for a Scarlet Witch show, actually.
Seriously, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, actually, that wasn't your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, here's the real Quicksilver.
Yeah.
Evan Peters.
Speaking of streaming services, have you had a chance to peruse DC Universe yet?
No.
No, well, I am obsessed with it already. And they haven't debuted any new content yet, and at this point, they don't even need to for me. I have done nothing but watch this thing.
Seriously? Since
I was watching Super Friends. They have all 9 seasons of the Super Friends. I was watching Super Friends episodes. I was watching Batman the Animated Series, like, remastered in HD. It looks amazing.
Okay.
I watched Batman 89 just because.
On Batman Day?
On Batman Day, yep.
Right.
And I mean, I've gone through Wonder Woman episodes. I mean, I'm watching stuff that I had probably already seen like a week earlier, just watching it through there. This thing is amazing. If you're a DC fan and you're still trying to decide whether you want to do this or not, I say do it, because it is like, and when the new stuff starts to debut, it's going to be even better. But as it is even right now, with the limited kind of archive content that it has, it's a fantastic service. It's a dream come true for people like us. I cannot recommend it enough. You have to try this thing. It's so great.
All right. Well, maybe by next episode, I will have subscribed. We'll see.
Yes.
We'll see. Yeah, I may actually do it tonight. We'll see. I'm feeling inspired. You're throwing out all this, you know, Super Friends stuff, and I'm like,
oh,
oh
my
man,
god,
it's
the
been
Super
such
Friends
a long
stuff
time
alone.
Since
I mean,
I've seen that.
look, Batman the Animated Series is my favorite thing
cool.
ever. And you know, I also loved Superman the Animated and the Justice League stuff, especially Justice League Unlimited. But just to be able to sit there and go through all of those seasons of Super Friends and all of its various incarnations, you know, just the Legion of Doom stuff, the Challenge of the Super Friends, the Galactic Guardian stuff, like in the last season where it wasn't even called Super Friends anymore. There's just, so, oh my God.
Out of curiosity, do they have like the newer movies, like The Death of Superman?
They do, actually. Death of Superman is on there, yeah. Yes, they
okay.
do.
Wow.
Batman Ninja was up on there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotham by Gaslight. All that stuff was up there. So.
Oh, well, pass on the Gotham.
Yeah.
Basically, plastic bag, man. This stupid little cowl.
No, not Gotham. The the
sorry.
Gotham by Gaslight. The Elseworld.
Okay, sorry.
Thing. Yeah.
I was like, nah. Pass.
But don't hold back, though, on the Gotham.
I can't stand Gotham.
Lois and Clark is on there. The Adventures of Superman with, you know, George Reeves on there. The old movie series.
They have the Max Fleischer.
They have the Fleischer stuff, which is, if you haven't seen the Fleischer Superman stuff, it's a must-see. It's incredible. I mean, the storylines are a little weird after a while, but what it meant to animation. And how important it is, and the base, and how much it influenced like Batman the Animated Series and stuff like that. You got to watch that.
Yeah, that's live action. They would have someone act it out.
Yes.
And then they would do the art on top of it.
Yes, it was revolution. The Fleischer brothers were incredible. I mean, they did Gulliver's Travels. They did the early Popeye cartoons that were revolutionary. That was their thing. So yeah, they were pioneers. But then. Famous Studios took over and did the second half of that Superman show, and it's not as good, but it's still very important. It's still important stuff. And if you watch it, marvel at what they were doing with animation at that time and realize the time period that it came out in, and it's incredible.
Mm.
So that's all there. So, well, actually, that stuff's public domain anyway.
Yeah.
So it was everywhere,
YouTube,
but still, to have it all in one spot now. Mm. Is to be able to go through all those. I mean, if you're a Superman fan especially, I mean, you could watch the movies. You could watch the Superboy is even on the streaming service. So all the animated stuff, of course, even Static Shock and stuff like that, which is really cool. So, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on there.
Very cool.
Yes. And it's going to grow. I mean, this is just the beginning, rollout. You know, think about what this thing could be a year from now. With the new stuff and extra content that they add to it and all of that stuff. I mean, it's incredible.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you kind of sold me on the Fleischer stuff, because that's just a direct callback. I mean, I remember my dad when I was a kid. He bought all these like VHS tapes, and it was a Fleischer series. So I had some Popeye and the Superman stuff, and I used to watch it all the time when I was sick. And stay home.
Oh, man, it's so good.
Just pop in that VHS, and that'd be shortly followed up by The Princess Bride and then Willow and whatever else I could get my damn hands on
there
at the time.
There you go.
The Star Wars. Yeah.
But I own like four different versions of the Fleischer Superman cartoons, because like I said, anybody could release them, and anybody basically did. But just to have it, again, the idea of having, and I own... You know, when the Blu-ray comes out of Batman the Animated Series, I'll have two versions of that I'll own. But I'm just to be able to have it all in one place and to stream it from wherever, like wherever you are. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that to me. And it's owned by, you know, the content creator. So it's not going anywhere. I mean, unless it just fails, which I don't think it will. And I hope it doesn't, because everyone should go subscribe now. But yeah, it's tremendous stuff.
Cool.
Yep.
All right, man. I'm gonna sign up.
There you go.
I promise you, I'm actually doing it right now.
And speaking of Batman, we had the other big news that came out this week is that the first image of they say Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. It's not really a picture of him as the Joker. It's a picture of him pre-Joker in the movie Joker.
Right. His name is Arthur.
His name is Arthur. And he looks like Joaquin Phoenix with long hair. So I'm not really sure what to do. People were like flipping out over it. And I was like, well, it's a picture of Joaquin Phoenix with long hair.
Yeah, it kind of looks like Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, a little bit. But
it was kind of creepy.
Yeah,
how you feeling?
I gotta be honest with you. So I'm more excited about this movie than I was, say, a few months ago.
Yeah.
Because I see what they're putting into it, and they're clearly this is going to happen, right? It's not just an idea now, and they're obviously Joaquin Phoenix is fan. No, it really isn't going to be a butt here. It's just that Joaquin Phoenix is amazing, and I think he could nail the hell out of this thing. You know, so I'm kind of pumped. I mean, granted, I'm going to still want to see like at least a trailer or something just to get a full feel for where they're going with it. But I'm in, I think, on this now. And I guess it's going to come down to, not that it really matters, is where does it fit? Does it fit? Do we care if it fits? You know, we talked a little bit about on Twitter last week about the villains, right? Making movies where villains are the star and the hero that was their rival or their nemesis or whatever are not in the movie, right? So Venom was the example that people were using. And we're going to talk about Venom in a little bit, but, you know, Joker is kind of the same thing, right? At least we think. Mm-hmm. It's essentially an origin story of the Joker. We're not really sure what it's based on, you know, if it's based on any past origin of the Joker or not, or if it's a completely original tale. And it doesn't seem like there's going to be a Batman in it. Which is okay. I think it's a little different than Venom, right? Because Venom, his origin is so tied into Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That it's hard to separate the two, although they have, you know, no pun intended. But Joker, you could tell an origin story, I guess, of Joker, and it doesn't necessarily have to have Batman in it. I mean, yeah, there have been versions that are like, well, it was Batman that made him the Joker, and we've know that.
Right, the whole Red Hood thing.
The Red Hood origin with the, you know, the chemical plant and all that stuff obviously is tied into Batman, but you don't have to go that route necessarily.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more on board for this than I was, say, a few months ago, and mainly because of Joaquin Phoenix and because of the fact that it's clear now that they're all in on this movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if it's a fun little Elseworld tale that exists in its own little thing and it's a great movie, then great. I'm not going to complain about it just because it's, you know, again, it's the whole like, well, it's not what I was expecting type thing.
Right. Yeah. So were you more excited about seeing the photo or is your excitement level just because it's become more of a reality than initially expected?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not about the photo. Like I said, the photo is basically a photo of Joaquin Phoenix with long hair. I don't know why everybody was
skinny-looking Joaquin Phoenix.
So I don't know why everybody was kind of flipping out over it, but it's just, what I'm reading about the movie and seeing, like, just seeing the process, and that's what's getting me a little bit more excited about it than the idea of the movie.
Yeah, did you see the footage? Like it was like a 10-second, 12-second piece of footage where he's laughing or something like that, and he walks over to a clown and takes his nose
off his
face and throws it down the street or something like that.
No. I'm going to need to see that.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really add anything. It doesn't really spoil anything. But you can actually see how thin he's gotten for this role. He's very, 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 very skinny.
Well, he's the type of actor that would do that, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'm okay with it. Sure. I want to see, you know, it's funny because people are like, oh, Aaron, your continuity thing must be on. I don't even care about the continuity of this Joker. I just wonder, and this was a lot of our conversation with folks from Batman on Film. Sorry. I was going to say BOV, but it's not that.
No.
From, you know, some Justin Kowalski and Ryan Haas and those guys. You know, I'm of the mind that if it makes money, they're going to want to continue somehow, I think. But apparently this is a one-off, like truly a one-off. Joaquin is only signed up for one film, apparently. So yeah, it could be a one and done thing, and then they just move on to something completely out, something completely different. And who knows? I mean, if this is something that is an origin of the Joker, what if it starts off with a Joker that is familiar to us, just kind of making stuff up in his own mind? Like, what is it? Well, I'm sorry, my mind is like totally blank today, but there's a book where he makes up like three different versions of his backstory. So who knows if that's the lens.
And they even alluded to that in The Dark Knight, right? He every time he told someone a story of his, how he got his scars, different. It was a completely different story.
Right, yeah. Right. So it'll be interesting to see. Hey, we're getting a Joker film. Like, it's real. It's happening. So hold on to your butts. It's coming one way or another.
Well, here's something, and I'm going to throw this out here, and it's such a hypothetical that it's not like we're going to be able to get to the bottom of it or even think that it's a thing right today. But they say it's a one and done thing, and I'll take them at their word for it today.
Mm-hmm.
But if this thing is successful, right, and Joaquin Phoenix is getting rave reviews and people love it,
mm-hmm.
and we don't see Jared Leto's Joker in a movie, right, say Suicide Squad 2 or anything else coming up.
Right.
And Matt Reeves' The Batman happens and it's a hit and people love it. Like, are you telling me that there's no chance that we might see Joaquin Phoenix's Joker pop up there at some point? I mean, we know he's not the villain in The Batman. They're going in a different direction, and that's fine. They probably should. We've seen the Joker a lot. But you're telling me that the door is completely closed shut on that ever happening? I don't know that I believe that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, money talks.
Yeah.
If it makes bank, I mean, they're gonna try to milk it, you know? At least I think they are.
And why wouldn't you? I mean, that's the thing, right?
If people are like tripping over themselves for it, and it crushes at the box office with like, you know, a minimal budget, and it like does super well, yeah, they're gonna want to go back to the well.
Yeah, and
sure.
Crushes at the box office is relative in this case, obviously, because this is it's going to be a smaller budget film, you would think, and it's more of a niche thing. So it's not like, I don't think they're expecting this thing to do like $1 billion, obviously.
Yeah,
or even maybe $800 million, but it could do well at the box office relative, right? I mean, I think the expectations are not going to be blockbuster like,
right.
But it could still do well, whatever that means for this movie. But
right, I'm not expecting like $1 billion, like blockbuster, like a Avengers Infinity War. But I think it's similar to what Fox is trying to do with New Mutants, right? Something that feels a little different, that plays in the universe, so to speak, but ultimately may not entirely be connected in a way. But I think New Mutants is. But the tonality of it's supposed to be a little different.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, here's to seeing a trailer soon, hopefully. I mean, it just started. And there was a whole bunch of casting announcements and stuff like that. Like, I think one of the – was a guy that was formerly in the Batman. I think he plays
in the
like
Dark Knight Rises. Yeah,
he just got cast as Thomas Wayne.
Yeah, which is a – Now, it's interesting. I was reading that apparently the direction that they're taking with the character is that he's kind of like an 80s Donald Trump. And that's why Alec Baldwin bailed out.
Which
right. Is kind of interesting.
I mean,
it'd be an interesting portrayal of Thomas Wayne, kind of, right? Because Thomas Wayne, and if you go to the Nolan movies, he was like this revered citizen. Yeah.
And now he's becoming, you know, but again, if this is all through the lens of the Joker, right, which
correct.
Is what I hear what this movie is supposed to be.
Yes.
He's going to have a slightly skewed visual of the people around
sure.
him, including those folks in power.
Yeah. Yeah, something's going to cause him to become the Joker, obviously. And it's not
right.
because everything around him is awesome.
Right. Right. Yeah. This ain't the Lego movie.
Right. So, all right. Well, let's get into some questions because we got a bunch here.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with, I'm just going to take them pretty much in order here. So because we
oh wait get, wait yep. Should we wait before we get into that? I know we had a we had a record week.
Oh yes, we did
this past week. As we were talking and covering the announcement about Henry Cavill no longer or potentially no longer playing Superman. So we just want to quick thank you to all the folks that are new and have downloaded the episode and are continuing to spin that one out of control. You know, as of now, there's been really no update or commentary from either Henry Cavill's camp or DC at the moment. So we are anxiously watching this one because we know it's so important to folks, and you know, hopefully there's some sort of resolution, but the way it sounds is that, you know, obviously Superman is really not a priority for DC at the moment.
And I think that the way they're kind of getting around having to anybody make an announcement at all is the fact that they're just, the idea is that right now Superman, the character, forget about who's playing the character, but the character of Superman is not factoring into their plans right now.
Right.
So because of that, they don't necessarily have to revisit the idea of who's going to play the character.
Right.
So that's really what this winds up coming down to is right now is forget about Henry Cavill, whatever the case may be. The idea is the character of Superman right now is not, doesn't seem to be for now in their plans. And whether you want to call that a negotiating ploy or leverage or whatever, fine. But that seems to be the way they're going about it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a damn shame.
Yeah.
That is a damn shame to me. Yeah. But, hey, I mean, we'll continue to monitor. We'll continue to watch. We'll see how it
there,
how
there
it all
will be plenty
out.
More conversations. I'm sure, especially if this Supergirl thing does wind up happening, I'm sure that'll open up a whole new world of conversation.
Yeah,
that would
I am so intrigued at that move. I'm very, very intrigued at that move. And I know that there's a huge priority for both Disney and Warner Brothers to continue on the road of, you know, female-led superheroes. And I'm not going to knock that. I think that's awesome. But at what point does that become just a sort of, I don't want to say that it's not cool, but it just becomes normal. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I'm just...
Well, that's going to be anything, though, right? I mean, there's always going
to
be the first of anything is always going
to
be, you know, the biggest, and then eventually... But that's the whole point, right? That's what breaking barriers and stuff means, right? Is that you're... It's not to keep having novelties. It's that you eventually take something that was, you know, at one point something that people didn't do, and then you kind of break through that barrier and you become the pioneer, and then eventually it's the norm. I mean, that's really supposed to be the goal,
right? Keep on chopping at it.
Yeah, to the point where after a while people aren't saying female-led superhero movie, African-American-led superhero movie. It's a superhero movie, right? I mean, that's where you want to get to. So, I think that's a good thing.
Yes. Agreed.
So,
sorry, I totally derailed that.
That's okay. So, we're going to start with Ron Diesel. Got a couple of questions in here, but his first one was Metal Gear, Splinter Cell, and Uncharted. Which of these three video games can be easily made into a movie, and which can be very difficult for a live action film?
So I will ask you a question before we get into that. Have you played any of those games?
So it's funny you mentioned that, Aaron, because I am not really much of a gamer these days. I was at one time in my life. But so of the three, the only one that I really knew of from back in the day was Metal Gear. It's been around for a while. So but because we got the question, I actually did research these three games because I wanted to be able to have an answer. Yeah, so I do know what they are, and actually all three of them sound like they could make really good film franchises, to be honest with you. It's just that for me, I just don't know what it is about Hollywood's attempt at making movies based on video games. But I mean, as we all know, and we're not breaking any news here or anything, I mean, it very rarely goes well. And I don't know why. I don't know if they're just not picking the right one, or if they just don't kind of pay it the same respect that they would other things. I really think that you just need to get that one movie that winds up, you know, because there was a time when, you know, there was trouble. They had trouble making superhero movies, too, you know, save for one or two here or there. But you're going to need that one movie that really just kind of kicks it to the next level. And then all of a sudden, like, these types of properties start to get a little bit more respect and they're taken more seriously. And you're going to have a pick of a better maybe talent pool. And I think that's what it's going to take. But I think that those three titles, based on what I know and or kind of read about today, I think they would all make for not just great movies, but great franchises, like film franchises.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would love, 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 love to see a Metal Gear Solid film. I would love it. It's one of my favorite games. Now, see, I've played all three of those games. And I've played multiple versions of those games. So I'm very, very familiar with them. I'm very familiar with the story. You know, I if I were to gamble and say the hardest one to pull off, but it's funny because it's the one that's actually probably closest to production, it is Metal Gear Solid. The
which has been teased for like they've been talking for years about making a movie out of that.
Yeah. And only because of the scale, because it's such a big it's a big story. You know, there's lots to chew on. There's some weird like cloning stuff that happens. And you know, it's funny because of all of the you know, the movie game the movie video game movies that are out there, I mean, there's only one that really sticks out in my mind that was successful, and that was Mortal Kombat back in the 90s. The others have kind of flopped. I did see Tomb Raider recently, and it just felt, I don't know, it was taking a lot from the new launch, Rise of the Tomb Raider, that whole, the new series that's been rolled out recently. So it just didn't pay off on it. I did watch Assassin's Creed, and that was just too hokey. So the funny thing to me is, you know, in a lot of ways I compare the video game attempts at movies similar to the graphic novel attempts in movies. And so what do I mean by that? There are, like, Blade, for example. I don't think a lot of people realize that Blade was a Marvel film back in the day.
They probably didn't at the time, no.
Yeah, so if you,
or maybe The Crow too, that The Crow was a comic, a graphic novel.
Another great example. There's a whole bunch of movies out there that are from graphic novels that have translated pretty well, and you don't really need to be a blockbuster, right? You don't. The story just has to remain intact. You've got to get great actors. The story has to be tight. So I mean, Road to Perdition is a graphic novel,
right?
Running Scared with Paul Walker, I think, is a phenomenon. What's her name? Vera whatever.
Famiga.
Yeah, that person. She's in that movie. That's a great graphic novel adaptation to film. So, you know, I think I can't necessarily put my finger on one thing, but I think they try to play too much in, like, this is a video game movie, you know, like, just so everyone's on board with it. And if they just stuck to, like, just keeping it a good story. So in that sense, I think Splinter Cell would be a great, would probably do really, really well if they just sold it as a spy thriller.
Yeah, or just that, actually, again, based on what I was reading about it today, like, that's something that could even work as, like, a show, right?
A TV show. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Uncharted feels too much, I mean, because it pulls a lot from the Tomb Raiders and the Indiana Jones and all of that. So I don't, and, you know, National Treasure. You know, there's so many of those kinds of movies out there that I just feel, I feel like it's one of the, you know, one of the same. Metal Gear is a different story, you know, because it's so big in scope, and the stories are just very, very rich and detailed.
Right.
There's a lot for them to pull from. But ultimately, yeah, I think Splinter Cell would probably be the easiest to adapt. But I think Metal Gear would probably be the one that would be a big franchise sort of blockbuster for sure.
Here's the thing, though, with the Metal Gear thing is that movie, and again, maybe this is where they run into trouble sometimes. If you're going to do that, that can't be a small budget thing.
No,
so,
it's huge.
Like, you got to go, like, you got to really put everything into that and have faith that it's going to be a success, or give it at least every opportunity to be a success.
Yeah.
And just, you know, because it's a pretty grand thing. So you would need to really put a lot of resources into that to make it work. And I think sometimes that's where they tend to fall short, because they're like, oh, it's a video game. The name alone will draw some fans and you'll get that audience and, you know, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
So Ron had one other question. I know I said I was going to take them in our order, but I'm just going to skip around because he had two questions. So cool. His second question was, with the recent news about Snyder confirming that Adam was going to be in his Justice League movie and everything else leading up to this point, do we think this is another one of those things Snyder trying to jam too much into one movie? And did it relate to the runtime mandate?
So I don't necessarily think it was Snyder trying to jam too much into a movie, because initially, let's see, he had so it was Man of Steel, BVS, Justice League. I think he had like a 5-film idea.
Right.
And Justice League, we know, was supposed to be a 1- and 2-parter yes. film.
Exactly.
So, you know, there's a lot that they needed to kind of fill in. And if they were introducing some of these new characters, it kind of makes sense. I mean, who knows if it would have been a fully fleshed out Adam. It could have just been Ray Palmer, who kind of helps somehow, and then ultimately it's just a tease, you know, sort of expanding the universe a little bit. So I mean, that could have been the way it is, and you know, it would have been interesting to see, of course, because you know, that character is so important to Legends of Tomorrow, the TV show on the CW. So you know, it's a fascinating take. I don't necessarily think that runtime had anything to do with that, because he never got to make his movie.
Right. I mean, like you said, his original concept for this, and that's what we have to assume this was all based on, was this was Justice League Part 1 and Justice League Part 2. And so in that context, and of course, you know, figuring Superman wasn't really going to be a big part of Justice League Part 1 originally, there would have been room, right? And I do know, I mean, it did appear that they were using, you know, some elements of like the Frank Miller Dark Knight universe, you know, obviously was a lot of the basis for BVS. So Adam plays a role like in Dark Knight Strikes Again and stuff like that. So, you know, it makes sense that it would happen. And they certainly could have very easily fit that character in, even like you said, even if it was just like as the scientist element of it, right? And the Ray Palmer element of it. So, you know, I don't think that it's a case of Snyder throwing too much out there. What I do think the problem ultimately, though, would have been is the fact that I was never a big fan of the idea of using Justice League as a way to sort of introduce the characters for future solo films. Like, I just prefer the other way around. Like, I prefer you introduce me to the characters in their movies and then build to the team up, as opposed to do the big team up and then that will eventually lead to some solo films. So that's why I didn't like the idea that they kept rushing. They decided to do the whole rush to Justice League thing.
Right.
You know, and that has nothing to do. That's just the studio. You know, that's the studio made that decision and it was whatever. So I don't think that that it was a matter of like Snyder just trying to put too much into these movies. I just think that they were really hoping that the Justice League movies would eventually lead to this big universe and they would start introducing characters that way. And that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's just a lot to digest. And what ends up happening is you have folks who end up getting cut on the editing floor.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Yeah, no, it really does. I mean, think about it. He was going full steam ahead on introducing and providing all these backstories for The Flash and backstories for Cyborg.
Right.
And,
I mean, Iris West got cut, right?
Yep.
So, you know.
There were whole sequences that were filmed that weren't in the movie.
And, yeah, and obviously
Justice League.
Because of the director switch and them wanting to cut the time down and you know, basically saying, let's just get this out there and we want to kind of put an end to some of this stuff. And it led to a lot of, you know, subplots and extra storylines that would be more fleshed out and lead to ultimately some other solo films getting cut completely. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So Nathan Odinson, he said, if the powers that be came to us and said, the next live-action Ninja Turtles film is yours, build it from the ground up, what story, characters, and actors would you choose?
Wow. That's actually really, really hard for me.
Yes, I know. I've had the same reaction.
It is so hard for me because the very first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is basically like a holy grail for me.
It movie? Does such a the good live job. Action?
Sort of. What?
You talking about the live action movie the cartoon?
Yeah. The one from 89.
Gotcha.
89? 90? 89.
90, yeah. Something like that.
With, you know, Corey Feldman. That's the only known actor, I think. Well, you've got Kevin Clash, actually, the guy who voiced Elmo, actually. I love that movie. I mean, did I really like the fact that and this is actually where my continuity stuff, you know, if I could throw it all the way back there. I mean, I remember being completely bothered by the fact that Splinter, you know, came from a rat and wasn't a human being first that got morphed or like sort of mutated into a rat.
Right.
That kind of bothered me a little bit, but no, I mean, I thought that movie did really well, and I don't know. I struggle with, you know, obviously I'd love to see Krang. I think that's awesome. And we, you know, I did see the sequel Out of the Shadows.
Oh, you're talking about the new,
I did watch those two movies. And they're bad. They're really, really bad. But yeah, I mean, I like that. I mean, you know, in terms of actors, God, I mean, really anyone, it's, you know, I don't, cause you don't necessarily need actors, right? You need voice actors to do this.
Right. That's probably more ideal, I would think.
Right. That's a tough call for me.
It is. It's tough for me because I never read the comics and I grew up watching the cartoon, which I loved. And yes, I, like you, now I actually did not see the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in theaters.
Shame.
I saw it because one of my little cousin came over and he, I guess, was obsessed with it. So he had like the VHS tape and he wanted to watch it. So I was like, all right, we'll watch it. And I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that was actually really fun. The sequels, not so much. And the newer ones, not at all. But I don't know. I mean, I would probably just have to tell an origin story first, right? Like a traditional origin story, because I'm going to want to be rebooting this thing, I would think. Right. You know, maybe make it a little bit more faithful, but I don't know. I don't know that I...
Yeah, the first one was... To me, the first one's so good. It's just kind of hard to do it. And then you think about the animatronics and the makeup that was used in the film. It's just... It doesn't get better than that, in my opinion.
Well, you could probably... Casey Jones. With modern day improvements, you could probably improve on it, but I think the story was good, you know?
CGI.
Yeah.
Which sucks. You know, I don't really like the new ones. I don't like the Bay.
No, the Bay, well, the new ones though had their bigger issues than the CGI though. But
yeah, I mean Megan Fox. Ugh. Ugh. Can't even.
No.
Yeah. Sorry, Nathan. We're really not answering your question.
No.
I tried to give it. I gave this one a lot of thought.
Yeah, I did too. I was thinking about this for a couple days, and I was like, man, I can't put my finger on specifics of it, but considering your Batman Beyond pitch, I'd actually like to hear your ideas for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Nathan, and feel free to send that along, and maybe we'll share it on the next episode, because I'm still thinking about the Batman Beyond one. So,
yeah, same.
So, cool. Brandon Alvarado said, who was the person growing up that influenced that inner fanboy?
Yeah, I think this was I love the question. I think we've both talked about this to some degree in previous episodes, but I'll start. My dad for sure. My dad loves still, you know, all of these, you know, fantasy films, sci-fi movies, old school like Western type stuff. You know, the whole ninjas thing, martial arts. I mean, like, I get all of that from my father. And sitting with him and watching, you know, movie after movie. I mean, back in the day, like every Friday night, we'd go to the video store and rent the new film, and my dad would let me pick one out, or we'd pick one that, you know, was the most popular film that was coming out, and we'd watch that. And, you know, my dad had a friend that I think was probably bootlegging videos, but we had lots and lots of VHS cassettes watching, you know, Star Wars or Enemy Mine or, I mean, God, there's so much, like Child's Play, Critters. I mean, my dad had everything. And so I was exposed to all of that stuff. And, you know, my dad was the first person to take me to the movie theater to see Superman. You know, and to this day, I'm still jealous about this. So let's get the leather couch and I'll talk to someone about it. But my brother was out sick one day at school, and my dad took him to go see Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. And I was so pissed off because, first of all, if you were homesick, you're not going to the movies. At least that was the story. That was the case for me all the time. But yeah, so I mean, that was, you know, my dad took me to go see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom in the theater, yeah. You know? So, he played a very, very big role in my fandom and, you know, all the things that I love and watch today. I can link directly to him. My bond love comes directly from my dad, you know, watching the old school Sean Connery films, you know, like Dr. No and Goldfinger and stuff like that. So, yeah, the fandom runs deep, and I am passing it along to my daughter.
There you go.
She'll be able to say that in the next 20 or so years.
So for me, I guess I basically have a similar story in that, like, my dad, while he was not like a comic book reader or like a big fan necessarily of like superheroes or anything like that, he though was the guy who would always take me to the movies, you know, to see Superman, Batman, you know, mm-hmm. Star Wars, Star Trek, whatever. He would buy me the comics, you know. He'd buy me just random comics just to bring them home, you know, because he knew I liked to read.
Yeah.
And my father did, though, have just an incredible love for movies and going to the movies. And my father would always tell me that, you know, as a kid, he's like, you know, we didn't have, you know, a lot of television, or there was one television in the whole neighborhood. So, you know, they would sit in the movie theater all day. You know, and for like a little bit of money, you'd get two movies, you'd get like a cartoon, a newsreel, and it was like a whole day. People would just spend the whole day at the theater. And, you know, we were always going to the movies. It was like, especially in the summer, you know, when I was off from school, like we would plan out like our summer around the movies. And then like when, you know, VCRs and video stores became a big deal, I mean, you know, we were constantly like renting movies and going to the video store and asking for recommendations and, you know, kind of mapping out like, all right, well, we're going to watch this week and that week. And I know I mentioned back in the action movie episode that like we bonded over action movies. Like we would stay up all night and watch like kind of even the worst action movies you could think of. So I think my overall love of movies and television, you know, would definitely come from him. So, yeah, and that obviously, you know, kind of bred the inner fanboy in me, because that what really led to me finding the superheroes and sci-fi stuff and everything else that I love.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned about the comic books. I remember I just remembered my dad, right? He used to tell me stories, right, about how he had like all of these, you know, like the first Spider-Man and some early, you know, really cool comics, and how my grandmother threw them all away, you know, the classic story. Oh, I came home to come collect my stuff, and your grandmother had thrown away all my old comic books. And, you know, if she hadn't done that, you'd be rich. And and my dad really got me involved in collecting comics. I'm you know, my brother is the total jock, and I'm like the bookworm. And I loved to read. So my dad got me a subscription at a comic book shop where they would pick my favorite comics. And every week, he would go in and collect my brown bag of comics and bring them home. And I'd spend, the whole week and weekend just kind of tearing through those. And a lot of that. So my exposure to things outside of, the thing, the movies and things like that my dad was bringing me, like X-Men, stuff like that. I really gravitated to all of that too, through him. So.
And actually, now that I think about it, even my mom too. I mean, my parents, we always pretty much went to the movies together, like as a family. And like they would always have, like, my mom would organize my like birthday parties, which would have like a Star Wars theme or a Batman theme or whatever. And they would get the cake. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, before you could go to like Carvel or Baskin Robbins and they already had the cakes made up with the characters on them. Yeah. Like you had to go to
that bakery.
You'd had to go to the Carvel with the napkin of what you wanted the image to look like. And they would have to put it on the cake for you and all that stuff. And it was a whole big thing.
Yeah.
They didn't have the book that you flip through and pick number 37 or whatever.
So funny.
So, like, even, mom, so too, I mean, she played they both played a big role in all of that. And even my grandfather taking me to the toy store, which was the other part of the fanboy experience as a kid.
Yeah. Ah, kudos to the influencers.
Yes. So, we got here from Superman fan number one. After 50 years, you're getting a sequel to Mary Poppins. Any childhood favorites that you're dying to see a sequel to?
Yeah, it was a whole lot of conversation on Twitter happening from folks. Yeah, that's a damn good question. That's from my buddy Phil. Yeah, I've got a couple. Flight of the Navigator is one. That's a deep cut from the 80s. I don't know if a lot of people have seen that. It's probably not as popular as I think it is.
Right.
And no, I think that's probably it. That's a big favorite of mine. I mean, everything else is kind of getting remade anyway.
That's what I was thinking. I was trying to come up with an answer. I was trying to find things that I loved as a child that either haven't gotten sequels or been remade or rebooted or anything. And I was struggling coming up with something, to be honest with you. I don't even know that there is anything that as a kid that I really loved that never got like a sequel or a reboot that at least now as an adult that I would like to see. I mean, there are things I liked when I was a kid that now I look back and I'm like, yeah, I didn't even like this one now, let alone wanting to see a sequel to it. But
right.
Yeah. But I don't know.
It was like White Fang.
Well, like even
I mean, they
like,
remade Benji.
I mean, like even the bad Masters of the Universe movie with Dolph Lundgren, right? Like I liked that as a little kid when I first saw it. I don't want to see a sequel to that. So, there's just things that are just like, they were good at the moment in the time or whatever. But everything else though that I really loved as a kid has pretty much gotten the sequel/reboot/remake treatment. So
what about Cobra? I mean, we're bringing back Rambo for the fifth time.
maybe it is time.
Why not Cobra?
Maybe it is time for a Cobra sequel.
Oh boy, I hope not. Just leave that alone.
So,
I would love to see. Wait, I would love to see a Dragnet sequel.
Wow. Okay.
With Tom Hanks, and Dan Aykroyd. That'd be fun to see.
I am
too old. Two old ass detectives on a new case.
That would be. I love Dragnet. Actually, it's a guilty pleasure of mine.
It's a great movie.
But I don't see Tom Hanks doing that somehow. Something tells me, I don't know. Call me crazy. Can't really see that. Yeah. That's going to be on the docket anytime soon for him.
It's so funny to me. Look at his career and like his transformation from like comedian to like dramatic actor.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No.
I mean,
it's
the dude
incredible.
Used to do nothing but comedy.
Right. And then Big happened, and that was right on the...
Philadelphia. No, Big.
Well, Big in the sense that, I mean, Big is still a comedy-ish movie.
Yeah,
but
a lot of heart, though.
Big was where people were like, oh, wow, this guy can act.
Yeah.
And now we're going to start...
And then Philadelphia.
Yeah, and now we're going to start putting him in more dramatic roles, and yeah.
All right.
So, all right. So there you go. So we want to see a sequel to Dragnet.
Oh, man. So, no, just leave it.
Leave it alone?
Right. Please stop KY-ing my childhood. Please stop it.
Gosh. So JRB asks, not the actors themselves, but the best character voice performances in movies not named Darth Vader. What do you think?
Yeah, somebody called this out. It was my answer. I had kind of stayed away from it because I didn't want to like look like that guy. But it's Andy Serkis. It's Andy Serkis, hands down. The dude from like motion
Gollum,
cap.
You're talking
like,
about,
dude,
or just in general?
Gollum, yeah. Caesar, Snoke.
Well,
you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, Gollum in Return of the King.
Yeah,
that is amazing work. Like, that's insane.
I think in Two Towers, it's really, for me, Two Towers is like...
He's great. I mean, it's
like
the
whole
thing is great, but yeah.
Smeager. Why does he cry? Smeager. Kermit hurts.
That's pretty
love
good.
Love that stuff, man.
That's pretty... You know what? Aaron Varol is my favorite voiceover right now.
No, it's Robert Marrera.
There you go.
There it is. Another one. Gosh, how could I not... Mark Hamill.
Well, that's the thing. So if we're going to count that type of stuff, so like obviously then I'm going to put Kevin Conroy in because he did Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which is a movie. And of course, Mark Hamill's in that as the Joker. So he's fantastic. Everything in that movie is fantastic. Even Abe Vigoda is fantastic in Batman Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah. Speaking of, we threw this out on Twitter. I don't even know if this is real. Like, in terms of what we would do with it. But it's being re-released in AMC theaters in November. I definitely want to see that in the theaters again, man.
Yeah, that's
definitely
exciting.
Mask of the Phantasm, that is. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Oh, wait, did you give an answer?
I'm with you. I'm going to go with Andy Serkis for that. And like I said, if we're going to count Mask of the Phantasm, then Kevin Conroy, Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd even say...
how about Corey Feldman in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
That was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I do like it. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that kind of sells it in. It's funny because... you know what? Here's one. Mike Myers, Shrek. That's a great one.
Well,
these are all animated films.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff from especially like from the Pixar stuff and like anything in Toy Story. You know, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff there. Ellen was great in Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
I mean, even what's his name, Eddie Murphy in Shrek.
In Shrek, yeah.
I mean, that was great. So yeah, there's a lot of. I mean, in that world, there's a lot of really great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Cool.
All right, so we got Tavo, who he had one. The first question he has is, what do we think of the Venom poster? So I saw the Venom poster, and actually before Tavo asked, and I was like, wow, I don't like that. And the reason why I'm not crazy about it is because I am not crazy about sort of the modern age of like Photoshop poster art.
It looks so bad.
And this is one of the worst examples of it. Like, if you're going to do, and I mean, look, I know the days of like the hand-drawn, hand-painted movie posters are gone. I get it. But, and I'm a big Photoshop user myself, but if you're going to do Photoshop movie posters, they have to have a unique sense of style and a unique flair to them. This doesn't. This is literally like, we're going to take a background, we're going to drop some people in, and we're just going to... It's very uninspired to me. I thought that there was a lot that they could have done with this. I even liked the simpler just his face, the face with the tongue coming out, that was cool to me. Much better.
It looked like a comic book cover.
Yeah. So I would have preferred something like that. I'm not crazy about that poster. That one that he put into.
Yeah, neither am I.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't even know what my eye is drawn to. It just kind of goes all over the place.
Yeah.
And
it just looks unbalanced too. It's like, it's a lot of empty space, and it's just not a really well done poster.
Oh, it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's a mess. There were two of them, right? There was like two.
Well, the one I just saw, the one that he actually put in the, like he embedded it into the question, that's the one that I had seen with the big Venom overlead looking over them. And
Right. Meh.
Yeah.
The whole damn thing, man. I don't know. I'm just feeling so not inspired about the movie in general. I don't even know why that is. It's just not like speaking to me. And I think a lot of that is because I know Spider-Man isn't in it.
Right. You know, and it's funny, I was talking to someone about it today, and a lot of people have that reaction, and a lot of people have the same reaction that I have, where it's like, wow, we really like Tom Hardy and Michelle Williams, and we like a lot of the cast, and we like it's not doing it for me, though.
Yeah, yeah, really, it just feels flat, and, you know, it's estimated to be, you know, to make, what, $65 million?
That's the last estimate I saw, yeah, for whatever it's worth.
Yeah. That's like, will it make that much? Will all those people go to see the movie?
Who knows?
Maybe. But like I said on Twitter, I mean, it's like it's basically a gluten-free brownie.
Yeah, that was a great analogy. Yeah,
it really is.
And I think that's the problem. I don't think people know what to do with this.
It's going to miss something.
Well, yeah, it'd be a very big something. Yeah. But I don't know that people know what to do with this. I don't think they know what to make of it. Like the and again, not us, because we, you know, we're all in on this stuff. Like we know everything. But like the average moviegoer, like, is this a villain? Is this a good guy? Is this a horror movie? Is it not? Like, what is this thing? Is it a superhero movie? Is it an action movie? That's why you're getting that reaction of like, oh, I really love Tom Hardy and so on, but I don't know what to do with this. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, and a lot of people are comparing it to Deadpool, which I think is so inaccurate in terms of like, oh, no one really asked for a Deadpool movie and it's not really connected to the X-Men. And then I'm like, nah, that's different. That's very different. Like Deadpool's
different.
Following is like rabid. You know what I mean?
And
like,
even with that, I mean, that movie was perfectly marketed. You knew exactly what it was supposed to be
by the time
you got to that theater. And it was exactly what they sold you. We don't know what this is supposed to be.
Right, because it's missing a key component.
And it's just not being, I don't think it's been marketed that well.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think you can say, oh, you know, it's a superhero horror movie, but not a superhero because he's not really a hero, he's an anti-villain. Like, what? Anti-hero, what? Right.
Oh, and he was a Spider-Man villain, but Spider-Man's not in it.
But he's not Spider-Man villain.
And he's not a villain even, maybe, we're not sure, and... Yeah, I don't know. We've gone over it a lot, but yeah. But just the poster itself, not really moving the needle for me.
Yeah.
Not my favorite piece of design work, let's put it that way.
No. Nope.
So, Tavo did have a second question, and it'll be the last question that we do here. Since it's going to take you a gazillion years to actually make the podcast, I will make the question. What is your favorite movie score of all time and why? And that is a great question, Tavo. And you know what, though? We're out of time. And we're not going to be able to get to it today. So, but thanks for the question.
Sorry about that, dude.
Yeah. No, we're kidding. Yeah. Sorry, Tavo. we're not going to do that to you.
Oh, man, dude. You're so freaking smart asking us this question.
We've made you wait 18 or 19 episodes, whatever it is already.
And
now we're going to somewhat, not the way we originally intended, but we are going to talk a little bit about this. So
we will. Okay, let's do it. Okay, you go first.
So my favorite score, and this is going to probably sound like a cop-out, but it's not because it makes complete sense, is it's still going to be Star Wars. It's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's John Williams, and it's just, it's epic. There's so many memorable themes. It, you know, not just the main one. I mean, there's so much. Yeah. It's such an amazing score. That's my favorite. However, I will say that followed closely behind, just because it's not nearly as epic and grand, is the Halloween score, the original Halloween score. because of the fact that I think that's one of the few cases where the score legitimately elevates that movie, like, well beyond, like, it actually makes that movie scarier.
Yeah.
It makes the movie better. It almost, like, winds up being like a character in that movie. It messes with you. It plays with you. It's such a perfect mix of score and feel. So I'm going to put that in there as well. It's clearly not as grand as, like, the Superman score, the Star Wars score, those types of things that jump out at you. Or even like the, right. I mean, now having said that though, I still say my favorite movie theme of all time is the Batman 89 theme by Danny Elfman. That Batman theme then that was later on adapted by Shirley Walker for Batman the Animated Series is my favorite theme of all time. But my favorite total score has to be Star Wars.
Yeah. So is that something that you listen to regularly?
Star Wars score?
Yeah.
No, I actually don't listen to film scores, to be honest with you, that much. I mean, I've watched the movie so many times that, like, I don't necessarily need to sit down and listen to them. So when it comes to, so this is how I look at music and movies, right? I put them into a couple of different categories. There's scores. So, you know, your Star Wars, Superman, Jaws, things like that, right? The classic scores. Then there's movies where the music in the movie is basically almost becomes like a character in the movie, but it's not really a score, right? So, for instance, Boogie Nights. The Graduate.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
The Graduate, American Graffiti, right? These are movies where the music in the background, in the scene, whatever, it's a character in the movie, basically. And then there are movies where, like, the soundtrack is actually is a great soundtrack and it's better than the movie itself or bigger than the movie itself. So like this, like Singles, the movie from the '90s about the '90s, like grunge scene, all time great soundtrack, much better than the movie, better known than the movie, bigger than the movie. So things like that, right? Like we mentioned The Crow, right? On the last episode, how The Crow had a great soundtrack. Right. So there've been movies like that where they had like great soundtracks that didn't necessarily factor in that much into the movie itself, but the music that it inspired or whatever was great. So that's how I look at music and movies. So I'll listen to soundtracks because I'm more of a song guy. Like, you know, I'll listen to the soundtracks. I'll listen to, but I'm not a score person as far as just sitting down and listening to it, the audio elements.
Yeah. I'm the complete opposite. I don't mind the soundtracks. You know, for example, Black Panther. It had two separate, soundtracks is the way it was released. But they had, they had music from Black Panther
and music then they had the soundtrack,
which is the score. So there's a lot of Kendrick Lamar.
That happens a lot. Yeah, you get the score. Because the scores and soundtracks are completely different things. That's kind of why I broke it up that way.
Right,
like a score is a very specific thing, and a soundtrack is also, they're two very specific things, and movies will often have both if they have popular music in them. So,
yeah, agreed. I listen to scores regularly. Like, probably more than my wife chooses to hear. I'll be in a car and I'll be like, yeah, I'm gonna listen to Hedwig's theme from Harry Potter, you know, or I'll listen to the main title of the opening credits to Game of Thrones. I listen to a lot of stuff. My favorite, this is so hard for me. It's like picking children. Because it's all about mood for me. It's like when, if I'm in a great mood.
Well, sure.
Or if I'm in a
particular
mood. And
scores vary dramatically, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Star Wars, yeah, that's iconic. That's like Holy Grail stuff. Superman, that's iconic. Batman 89, stuff like that. But like the one soundtrack I listen to frequently, it's usually, this is probably going to maybe blow people's minds because I'm always, you know, I write for a living. And when I really, really need to get into the zone, the soundtrack I put on is from Inception. I love Hans Zimmer's Inception score. It's just melodic. It picks up in places. Like there's a track called Mombasa. I have the extended edition, so I've got extra songs. Specifically, there's a, you know, that whole hallway scene, like, makes my hair stand up. It's so damn good. And I was just, I had to watch that movie last night as I was thinking about this. It's just such a great, so first of all, it's a phenomenal movie. I think it's such an underrated movie. I think people should be talking more and more about Inception, because I just think it's such a crazy concept of a film and amazing acting. I mean, we're talking about Tom Hardy before in Venom, and you, a great Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, Ken Watanabe, Tom Berenger. Gosh, who else is in that freaking movie? So many people. Cillian Murphy, and the score is just so amazing to me, and dynamic, and just a lot of fun to listen to, and just really, especially when you listen to Time, the track that closes out the movie. It's really good stuff. But yeah, I mean, so I listen to that regularly, and then in terms of like other stuff, I'm a big fan of the Black Panther score as well. I think in terms of Marvel's approaches to music, I think largely they've been uninspired.
Yes, but I agree.
That score in particular has some really interesting range and adds to, and you're talking about becoming a character in the film. I mean, I think the theme song for Wakanda has become so iconic with the character of the Black Panther that they dropped it in Infinity War, and it was just, it feels like Wakanda, you know. It's like the music that represents Wakanda. It's so good. And that was done by Ludwig Göransson, who also scored Creed, which is another great.
Another, there's a connection there too.
But you know what the funny thing is? So I was listening to that score, and to me, it felt very, when I was watching the movie, it felt familiar to a lot of the Rocky stuff done by, Bill Conti.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's so different. But it just, they do a lot of, you know, a lot of horns and stuff like that. It's a really, really good soundtrack. God, I could talk about this stuff all day.
We have to mention the Rocky IV soundtrack, right?
Dude,
was playing over and over again in my friend's house. I mean, we would, if that soundtrack doesn't get you pumped up in a very 80s way, then I don't know what.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Hearts on fire, and there's no easy way out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. So I box like pretty much every morning. I'm going to go tomorrow. And before I walk into that club, I do listen to the training montage one.
Yes.
The song. Yes. That track. It's so good. Get myself all hyped up. About to beat the bag. Start breaking some stuff. Chop wood. Climb mountains. You know.
Yeah.
Get you know, run off by some KGB.
Chopping
agents.
Wood is very important.
Yeah. Yeah. But seriously, there's just so, oh God. Oh, and then to talk about Howard Shore and what he did with The Lord of the Rings. I mean, I could listen to that too all day. All day. All three films.
Right.
Back to back. The Hobbit ones, nah, not so much. But Howard Shore's scores for those Lord of the Rings films is great stuff. And matter of fact, my wife a couple of years ago, maybe about 8 years ago, took me to see the at Radio City Music Hall. They did a live orchestra playing of the soundtrack with the film.
Right,
like, I was bawling.
Well, that I would definitely see. That sounds
awesome.
Oh
my god, that was just one of the best moments of my life. To be honest with you, it was just so cool to hear that music played by live instruments. With the film playing in the background, people, you know, they had people singing, all that, them providing the vocals. So this is just really, really cool stuff.
Yeah.
But
and I will say that, because you mentioned Black Panther, so that was one of the more recent, like, scores/soundtracks that jumped out at me. as being really effective. Also, one that I guess is more recent that really jumped out at me when I was watching the movie is War for the Planet of the Apes. I absolutely loved that score by Michael Giacchino. That one, it's rare that I'll be sitting in a theater these days and be like, wow, this score is incredible. But I thought that one was. And another movie that doesn't really get mentioned very often is for its music, and you know, probably because it wasn't the biggest part of the movie. But one kind of soundtrack slash score that I always really enjoyed was Leaving Las Vegas with Nicolas Cage and Elizabeth Shue. It's like a real jazzy kind of soundtrack that fits the tone and the feel of the movie perfectly. So that was one that always impressed me a lot too. More modern, you know, as far as like, it's not a big, you know, your typical classical score, symphony score, but
who scored that?
I don't know. I'd have to take a look, but yeah, I know that the director,
you know, it's funny. The, I don't even know who this, I don't know who that is. You know, you talk about jazzy, you know, this is a John Williams one, but Catch Me If You Can is a great.
Yep.
I think that's also a great one. God, there's so many. First of all, John Williams is so eclectic. He's done so many different kinds of films that really accentuate the period that you might be, you know, immersed in as you're watching the film, the kind of film it is. You know, you think about like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So you go from Anything Goes, which he scored as well, and that opening scene with her name is Billy. So he did that, and then you know you get the triumphant score, but then he weaves in a little bit of, you know, because the movie's set in India, so you've got elements there, and you've got Short Round, so you've got some China, you know, a lot of Asian influence. There's some really interesting stuff. The guy's really good. Another great one, Big Fish.
Okay.
Like Danny Elfman.
Yeah, well, you know,
there's just so many good, you know, so many good. Danny Elfman is another one.
Yes.
I'm a big, big, big fan of his, one of his first scoring jobs, which was for Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, but it's awesome to see how he started and his evolution
and one of the,
as a composer.
Yeah, and I mean, and he was a rock guy. You know, kind of new wave, I guess, technically. But yeah, you know, he was in Oingo Boingo. And that's how he got it started. And now you're starting to see that more and more now. You're starting to see, like, guys that
were... Like Junkie XL.
Yeah.
He's one, for sure. And Hans Zimmer did the iconic Wonder Woman theme. Which isn't really a theme. It's just called Is She With You?
Right.
It's not, like, Wonder Woman theme. which spawned a huge argument, which is probably one of the reasons why, it is the inception of this podcast, because we got into a lot of, it was a very deep conversation about music. I think specifically about Justice League, I think it might have been. At or around that time, we were getting into it about motifs versus themes. Danny Elfman at the time was talking about he was going to be including the only theme, the only Batman theme.
Right. Yeah, we did have
huge.
I was on vacation. I was literally like in a supermarket in New Hampshire, and we got into this. I mean, my entire trip, I don't even remember what I bought. Like, I think I missed like half the stuff I was supposed to get because I spent like an hour and a half in this supermarket just going back and forth with everybody on Twitter about themes versus soundtracks versus scores and Danny Elfman's theme versus Hans Zimmer. It was, I will never forget that day.
Yeah, that was an intense, intense conversation on Twitter. And it's just kind of funny, like the end result of all of that. Justice League score is so...
One of my least favorite. It's, I mean, I think
it's
I said
a
it.
Bastardization of that iconic theme that he created so many years ago.
I said it when we walked out of the theater. I was like, you know, that Batman theme, his Batman theme is my favorite theme ever. And I just did not want to hear it again in that movie.
Yeah. I remember that. But, Davo, you're only getting a taste of this. Because I'm looking at the time. I'm like, yeah, I could go another hour and a half on this.
Well, now we're literally out of time.
Yeah, so. Seriously. Yeah. All right, so let's. I think did we hit every other question?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay, so let's do some plugs. I know we've got some stuff coming soon, events.
Yes.
Things like that. So, go ahead. You can take it away.
So, of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com, check out our merch store, buy some stuff. You can shop on Amazon using our Amazon Associates link that's on that page as well. Help support this site. You can also join the conversation. We've had some amazing conversations the last few weeks, you know, that I haven't been directly involved in all of them just because I've been really busy. But like, I remember like telling Aaron the other day, I was like, wow, these conversations are starting to get really, really good. So let's keep that going. Mm-hmm. And of course you can reach us on Twitter. You can reach me at RealCLMighty.
And you can reach me at Starting Sith on Twitter. And of course you can find us both at the Fanboy Garage on Twitter as well. And if Twitter is not your prime channel of communication, please email us at thefanboygarage.com.
Yes. And of course, don't forget October 5th, Friday, we will both be at New York Comic Con with Fanboy Garage giveaways. We're going to be recording some stuff for the show, and just, you know, come say hi if you see us. We're really excited about that. And October 27th is the Revenge of the Fans Halloween watch party, where we're going to be getting together to watch the new Halloween movie. And there's going to be a very special after party that I think by the time you're listening to this, Mario will have spoken about what that is, I believe. If not, that news will be coming very shortly, though. So we're really, really excited about that, too, for everyone that's in the New York area that wants to come and watch Halloween with us and meet us. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll have some stuff, too, that night, to some merch to give away.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be a sort of pre-party or a pre-movie party so we can talk to you then. And then, of course, afterwards, and continue to engage in conversation. So I would love to have you guys out. And then most importantly, you know, as Chris mentioned, we will be at Comic-Con. We won't be hard to miss. We'll be capturing images, some commentary, whatever, you know, segments of the show will be recorded there on site. So if you're there, if you've gotten your tickets, certainly meet up with us. And if there are things that you're interested in us sort of covering and or attending or things like that, we will be pulling together a sort of run of show for all of you guys and things that we'll be keeping an eye on. But if there's anything in particular you guys want us to check out, please let us know. Cool.
And all that's right, about it, right? So,
yeah, let's close that garage door and get the hell up out of here.
Talk to you next time.
Laters.